Welcome to the Thunder Buddies podcast. I'm Joe Masato, joined today by Jenny Carlson and Barry Trammell. We've got the whole crew here, so it's good to be back talking some basketball. And it's getting closer. The Thunder arrives to Orlando on Wednesday night. We have photo evidence that the NBA tweeted out of Steven Adams walking in with his guitar and what looked like a takeout bag from a local restaurant in Oklahoma City. So have confirmation that they've arrived. I mean, what do you guys think? Can you finally feel the excitement after all this time off?
Hey, Joe, the thing that stood out to me about some of those pictures were the amount of stuff that the guys seem to have with them. I know they're going for weeks. I mean, even if they get run out of the playoffs quickly, they're going to be there for a long time. So I get it. But usually these guys show up to the airport with like one little tiny bag, and they're in their travel vest and all these tiny designer clutches that they have. They had these massive roller bags and all sorts of stuff. So it's really interesting to think about what these guys are going into. I think Steven Adams, you mentioned him, Joe. He said this at one point last week. You know, he said this was history book stuff. And he's exactly right. I mean, what this experience is going to be like is something nobody has ever seen before. Nobody's experienced before. And, you know, while there are obviously a lot of question marks still out there, there is a level of excitement. Like, these guys are going to Orlando. They're together as a team. And now they can start the process of getting tested inside the bubble, starting practice later this week. So, yeah, I think there is a measure of excitement, at least for me.
Now, Jacko, you were headed, before the pandemic, you were going to go to the Olympics in Tokyo.
Correct.
You were going to be gone probably, what, 26 days? Is that right?
I think it was about a month, yeah.
About a month. You're going to be gone about a month. I shudder to think how many bags you might have taken with you. They might have had to add another flight. So
now, listen. Wait. Can I just say, I would have taken a lot of stuff, and there were some big bags in my plans. But Barry, I have traveled with you before, and sometimes you take bigger suitcases than I do. So let's be honest here. I'm not the only one who travels with a lot of stuff.
I didn't say I didn't. I wasn't the one popping Steven Adams. I will say this. I was massively disappointed nobody had on Mickey Mouse ears. I thought that would have been a nice touch. We need a little bit of lighthearted.
There's still time.
Maybe they can go out for the opening tip of the season when they play the Jazz on August 1st. Maybe they can walk out there with Mickey Mouse ears. And then knowing there's about a 90% chance they'll have to take them off and actually play the game. So, but no, it's good to see them there. You know, it gets us one step closer to the resumption of the season.
Now that they're there, I mean, that obviously seems like a big step. Are you all more confident that this thing is going to happen fairly smoothly and the season is going to be finished, the playoffs are going to be finished? Like, is this a big step now that all the teams are there?
I don't know. I mean, it was a step, no, because they were going to do this, I think, no matter what. I'm actually more pessimistic this week than I have been after Adam Silver a few days ago said, you know, he doesn't know what will happen if somebody tests positive in the bubble. I tend to think they need to have had a better, you know, a threshold than that. If there's a potential we're going to stop this thing or suspend this thing with one or two positive tests, then it's going to be stopped, because I think that's going to happen. Now, if it's 10 or 12, that's a different thing. But if it's one or two, I think you got to carry on. And if that's the NBA mindset right now, then I'm very pessimistic this thing would actually get seen to completion.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it is interesting that, you know, the plan that the NBA has been widely heralded as a really good plan, you know, over 100 pages, very thorough. But it is troubling that there's not really a standard by which, you know, tests would, you know, lead to certain things. You know, six tests equal this, 10 tests equal that. You know, that's interesting that within all that planning, they haven't really set that threshold for what could happen. But, you know, I do think the fact that you're seeing some of these other team pro team leagues, you know, get into some sort of centralized situation. Obviously, the MLS is down in Orlando too. They've had some trouble. They FC Dallas went home after they had 10 players test positive, you know, that sort of thing. Maybe that happens. Maybe there's a team that does have to go home out of the NBA bubble. The National Women's Soccer League is out in Salt Lake City. They've been going longer. They initially had to send the team from Orlando actually back to Orlando because a bunch of them went out, tested positive. But since then, it's been relatively, you know, drama-free. So there are going to be hiccups. There's no doubt about it. But I think Barry's right. The fact that at least publicly they haven't said what those standards are for either stoppages or forfeitures or whatever. I don't know. I don't know what that's going to look like. Maybe they know and they're just not saying, but that does seem a little bit odd that they would be as thorough as they were in their plans, but maybe not have a set of standards for what happens along the way.
Yeah, and it would be really easy to, you know, to know what's going on if there was like, okay, this X number of positive tests equals cancellation of the bubble, everyone goes home. But we don't know that. I mean, Adam Silver and the league are definitely giving themselves a little flexibility there to make a real-time decision. I do think the NBA's plan is still probably the safest plan you could possibly have at this point. Like, baseball is supposedly starting up later this month, and they're still going to be traveling out of market, still within their division and in the opposing league's division. But still, that's a lot of travel, and you know, not a bubble at all. So I think the NBA's plan is still fairly safe, or as safe as you could be at this time. And I also think one thing that is helping the NBA is, you know, you've had some fairly big names opt out, Avery Bradley, DeAndre Jordan, but for the most part, the superstars have all bought in. And I think one thing that could have doomed this plan is if someone like Giannis or LeBron said, I'm out and I'm not going to play, because the NBA probably wasn't going to play. How much of that, Jenny, do you think is like Chris Paul? He's had such a huge role in this whole thing. Does it help in a way that like a superstar led this whole return to play negotiations and Orlando plan?
I have to think so. And it's not just that Chris is a great player, was an all-star this year. You know, it's not just that. To me, he's a guy that has shown himself to be really well connected to the guys that are also on that Players Association board, but also other superstars who are no doubt leaders on their own teams. I mean, LeBron, obviously. I mean, he's known these guys. And so to be able to not only have a good connection with that Players Association board and to be able to be honest and open with those guys and say, you know, what do you think? Here's what I think. But then to also have that expanded network of friends that he's built over, you know, more than a decade in the league, that, you know, he's liked, and got, you know, guys like him, he likes guys around the league. I saw him tweet congratulations to J.R. Smith and Jamal Crawford after they got signed the other day. You know, and I think back to when Chris and JR were here with the Hornets. I think Chris and his brother picked up JR to get him to practice every day. So, like, he's been that guy basically since he came into the league, just a people person. And so I think to have that, you know, it's not just that he's able to, you know, have those contacts, but guys trust him. They know him not just as a player, but as a friend. And so I think that has to have been super helpful to develop the plan, to get the word out. And I think guys trust him. I mean, I think he's proven he's a guy that, you know, is able to process and, you know, handle a lot of different information and different ideas and really kind of bring it together. It's been impressive to hear all that he's done and the impact he's had. But yeah, Joe, I think there's no doubt that has had an impact.
Any thoughts on Chris, Barry?
Oh, you know, there would be a lot of worry for somebody that's had this much social responsibility, professional responsibility, and somebody that needed to sort of stay in shape. You know, Chris turned 35 during the break, and I don't really know about it's, you know, the NBA, the zenith of your physicality. I don't know, in baseball it's 27, in basketball it might be 28 or 29, but it's clearly not in the 30s. So he's on the downslope of his career. He's got to do more to stay at the same level that he was. It's something to worry about, but there's less reason to worry about it when it's Chris Paul, because he is a guy that's always taken care of business. He's a guy that's always answered the bell. He's quite responsible in everything he does. So I'm not too worried about it. But the age is something to keep an eye on, though, because, you know, he's never been 35 before, and he's never had to go through something like he's going through. But if anybody can handle it, it would be CP3.
Hey, Joe, you know, one thing I think about, and granted, he was not 35 at the time, but you and I know both watched the documentary on the Donald Sterling situation that happened when Chris was with the Clippers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was a, you know, the veteran captain of that team. And the way they didn't win a championship that year, they were felled by the Thunder in the second round. So we know that they didn't ultimately achieve what they, you know, they had the talent to potentially win a championship that year. But in my mind, that wasn't, I mean, Chris Paul handled that off the court and still did a ton on the court for that team. So he's obviously, that's not the pandemic, that's not this, but that was a huge, huge story that really zapped him in the middle of the season, really pulled him in a lot of different ways. So I have to think the experience of that at least is something that Chris Paul probably has been able to draw on. And, you know, yeah, he's 35, but you know, maybe he's a guy that having this amount of break, maybe this is a help. You know, he had played more games this last regular season than he'd played in a really long time. So, you know, I have to think that, you know, legs may feel fresher now than they would have, you know, otherwise. It's a great question. We don't know until we see, but I'm with Barry. I think this is a guy that, you know, Chris Paul's a guy we've seen handle it in a lot of different ways over the years. So I would not be surprised to see him play some good basketball when they get back out there.
Yeah. You know, I talked to Michelle Roberts, the executive director of the Players Association, last week, and she obviously cannot say enough good things about Chris and said that he's one of her favorite people on the planet right now, not only because he's making her job a lot easier, but she was saying how there's been plenty of superstars on that board before in leading that union who haven't put in this amount of time. And the time aspect is, I really want to talk to Chris about this, because it's like, I was watching, you know, the basketball tournament, TBT, and Chris Paul sponsors a team. He's like zooming into that tournament that I don't know how many people are watching. And it's like, how do you have time to do that when you're, you know, supposedly on the phone all day with the Players Association and, you know, still being a parent and all that? It's kind of crazy, but in a way, I don't know if this is attributed to Chris or, you know, the Thunder organization. I don't know. But Barry, we just recorded a video, and you mentioned this, that there's been all kinds of drama around the NBA, relatively little drama on the Thunder. The only player not making the trip is Isaiah Roby, who you may or may not have heard of, but the Thunder acquired him in January in a trade, and he had a minor procedure during the break, so he's not going. It's not a huge loss for the Thunder. He only played in three games. But other than that, no players even coming close to opting out from what we've heard publicly. No discontent. I mean, morale-wise, it seems like they're going in with pretty healthy and pretty excited.
Yeah, now, I think that is true. it's also possible the Thunder does a better job of keeping a lid on things than most.
That's
so if that was something that bubbled up, they might have not let it out.
Yeah.
I wonder, when I saw the Roby news, I wondered if it was possible that did the Thunder really just say, you know what, it'd be more valuable to have an extra video guy among our traveling party rather than Isaiah Roby, and just sort of made the decision, hey, let's go ahead and get your foot cut on. Those are the kinds of things that, if that's true, that Thunder does it in a way where nobody even knows about it, it's not a big deal. So I do think this, the chemistry issue is going to be nice for the Thunder, an advantage for the Thunder, because everything does seem to be going pretty smoothly with dealing with this pandemic. We've talked to a few of the guys, Adams, Gallinari, SGA, Dort, and nobody's even had a hint of dismay or disgust or alarm at anything, whether it was the way the whole pandemic was handled early or the way it's been handled late. It's more of we just sort of have to deal with it. And to me, that's the best kind of mentality. Things are going to go strange in Orlando. It's going to be different. You don't know what it's going to look like. Teams that can just sort of let it come up on them and roll off their back are going to come out better, I think.
Yeah. And the point about the travel party is well taken. Teams could easily do something like that. I mean, you have no idea that the NBA is not mandating you bring X amount of players, this amount of video people, coaches, whatever. Like, it's pretty up to you. Teams can bring as many as 17 players. The Thunder will only bring 16. Because of the new rules of this restart, teams cannot sign a substitute player for an injured player, only if a player has COVID or opts out ahead of time. So it's not like the Thunder are trying to create room for a better player. That's not going to happen. So I think that's interesting. Like we said, they did arrive Wednesday night. They are, I think, supposed to be in their rooms right now, all individually quarantining while they're in Orlando as we record on a Thursday morning. But they're going to practice at 1 p.m. Friday, which is, not the most noteworthy thing in the world, except they haven't practiced since March. They haven't all been on the court together. So I think that's going to be really interesting. Like, I mean, do you think the scrimmages are still a couple weeks away, but do you think we're going to learn a little bit from these scrimmages if they're televised about like what this team looks like again?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's all interesting to me, Joe. I mean, the fact that, to my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, but when those guys got on the plane to go to Orlando, it was the first time they'd all been together.
That's right.
First time they'd all seen each other.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like that, when you think about it, like, I mean, I understand why it's not, this is not a commentary on like, that shouldn't have been that way. Like, I get it, but it is interesting to think that they've really been individualized and, sort of kept in as small groups as possible throughout the day as they've gone through workouts and treatments and different stuff at the facility. The hope obviously is that once they test, everything will be fine. They've said since they all returned to the facility, they had no positive tests. Oklahoma's become one of those hot spots in the country, unfortunately, but they're going to a hot spot where, the hope is that they can stay within that, insulated bubble area and keep guys away from outbreaks. So, yeah, I mean, I hope that we do get to see the scrimmages to some degree. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how the different teams approach those scrimmages. I can't think they're going to want to run guys' wheels off, but at the same time, it's been forever since they've seen actual competition. So I have to think that's going to be maybe a higher level of game than, say, a preseason game. I don't think the first scrimmage game will be like the first preseason game. That's my guess. I mean, I don't know. I think that's going to be interesting to see how teams do approach it because, you're basically trying to get ready for the stretch run in the playoffs. And, you know, that's not the preseason. I mean, the preseason is, you know, kind of easing into things. Nobody wants to be running at, you know, optimum, or you'd like to be running at optimum RPM when the season starts. But, I mean, I think everybody knows it may take a little while, but this is a different situation. You know, and obviously different teams are in different positions. Are you trying to, you know, get higher in the playoff pecking order? Are you, you know, okay sort of where you are? So it's going to me, it's all fascinating. How do teams approach it? What does it look like? And yeah, I hope we get to see the scrimmages. I mean, I would watch. Barry, you watch if they show some of the scrimmages?
Oh, you'd have to tell me what day and time.
That's going to be the case for the whole schedule.
That's for
I can't get, I mean, yes, I'll watch, but only, I think, because of the novelty of the whole situation. I can't imagine us learning too much. I've never learned anything from an NBA exhibition game. So I doubt what I, here's what fascinates me about this is they're calling them scrimmages and not exhibitions. So I wonder what the format will be. Well, you know, scrimmages in my experience are vastly different from exhibition games. I mean, there are interruptions. Coaches walk out on the court and do stuff, or sometimes you got real refs, sometimes not.
Yeah. The time might be different.
Yeah, you don't play. You just play for an hour. You don't really – sometimes you don't even keep score. So I'm interested in what the format would be if it's actually more like an exhibition. You know, I would – I don't even know if I'd be more interested. I might be less interested. It might be fun to watch a real scrimmage and see how it goes. So I'll be interested to see how that is. I would be surprised, you know, Jacko, in your column – you got coming out, you speculated on whether or not they'd be on television, and I have no idea. I tend to think they won't be. I think they may be videoed and maybe used in-house as some sort of test case for the real games, just make sure everything's, you know, set up properly. I would be surprised if we see those on television, but maybe we are. Maybe that was part of the television agreement, but I'd sort of be surprised if those things are televised.
Yeah, I don't know about televised. Maybe streaming. I mean, maybe it might be like the Thunder's done that some with preseason games. You know, they've put it on their website or streamed it that way. I don't know. You got to think that the want for, you know, seeing what is going on is going to be really high. So how do the teams approach that? I mean, right now they haven't been able to give their local broadcasters a product for months. So is there a chance to, you know, do an hour where they just, it's sort of like summer league almost, you know, you got sort of one camera and you just let it go. Well, anymore, I guess summer league, they get more than one camera. It used to be back in the old days
in Orlando.
Yeah,
the Orlando League was that way.
Yeah, I just hope it's like a camera on a tripod in the middle of the ballroom and like really grainy footage of these scrimmages. Like, who's that out there?
I mean, I don't know what it. I don't know what the. I don't know if the, it would be a full fledged broadcast, but if they would just set up a camera mid court and follow the action, don't you think people would watch?
I will be watching, but that's also part of the job. So we'll tune in. Yeah, someone tell me what happened. I need to write about it. One of the 16 players, Thunder brought 16, Andre Robertson made the trip. I know we've talked about him a lot since January 18 when he ruptured that patellar tendon. He has not played. I think back to like even before I started on the beat, before the season started, I missed all of the exhibition games, but I went back and when I was doing a timeline of his injury, they really thought he was going to play in that first exhibition game before this season. And he was a game time decision for the season opener at Utah. Obviously Andre Robertson has not played at all. Do you, Jenny, let's start with you. Is there any chance he plays? Do you have any expectations to see him out there in a scrimmage, in a seeding game, or in the playoffs?
Golly, I would like to say yes, just because I like Andre Roberson. I like what he does on the basketball court when he's been healthy. I know he's been maligned by a lot of Thunder fans, but I think in the aftermath of his injury, people realized, if they didn't already, they realized what he brought to the floor, how good he was defensively. And, you know, there's in hearing from him since that day that he got hurt, you know that this has been, he's done everything possible. It's been a mental and physical challenge for him. And he's gone through the highs and lows of all of that. So in my heart, I want to see him out there because he's done enough to have that chance. But there's just been so many setbacks. Like you say, Joe, I mean, there was a time in this season when we thought it's going to happen. Like he's going to play. And instead, you know, there was, he gets basically, you know, goes to California because he's not seeing the progress and, you know, just
a mental reset.
Yeah. Give him time away from the team and kind of start it over. I mean, it's gone so wildly different than it seemed like it was going to go. It's just hard to, if you're betting on it, it's hard to say he's going to play. I mean, it seems like that's the way that things have trended with him on this whole thing.
What say you, Barry?
If Andre Roberson plays, I think it's a medical miracle, and whoever's responsible should be put on the COVID team for America. we've literally never seen an athlete that I know of sit out. What is it going to be? 30 months? Be 30 months?
Yeah. 2.5 years. Yeah.
Who's set out 30 months and come back and played? I don't know what's going on there. I think it's some kind of mirage by the Thunder. Everybody loves Andre. He's the consummate teammate. But, you know, nobody wants to be the person that pulls the rug out from under his hopes and dreams. But I just don't see it. So I think it's great to take him to Orlando if he wants to go. Having him around, probably good for morale. But, you know, trying to cover Donovan Mitchell or Kawhi Leonard did not seem like a good idea. So I literally think it would be one of the – if he's able to play, it'd be one of the biggest stories in Orlando. That,
yeah.
Not because of its impact on the season or any game, just the fact that, you know, you could make a movie out of it, you know. Like, so I'm pessimistic. I'm pessimistic.
Yeah, I am as well. I mean, I think it's highly unlikely. I also think this is not something I'm hearing from the Thunder, but I think there's a chance that, you know, he's, along with Steven Adams, the longest tenured player on this team. His contract expires at the end of the year. If he's never able to come back, this is like his last look at the NBA. I mean, this might be a thing where he wants to be with his team and travel and be with them as for what might be his last season in the NBA, because if he can't come back now, I think it's also highly unlikely he ever comes back for a team. So we'll see about that. And also just on court impact, I think that, like, if he does play, perhaps it's late in one of the seeding games, if the Thunder gets to a point where they can't move up or down, and it's just to have him out there and give him a chance to play. But in the playoffs, like, I don't know if you want to rely on a guy who hasn't played, you know, since January of 2018, especially when you've had someone like Lu Dort, who has a very, not near as long as Andre, but has a very similar skill set. You've got guys like Hamidou Diallo and Terrence Ferguson, who are also defense first guys that sort of do what Andre did, not at to the level certainly he did defensively, but, you know, there's some duplication with that skill set on this roster. So I just don't know if there's going to be a spot for him.
Hey, St. Joe, let me ask you a question. Do we know yet the entire manifest of who all made the trip?
We don't. I'm actually – I think we might get that today. I was asking about that yesterday. I think what I'm most interested about – we know the players. We know we know Billy Donovan's going to make the trip. I don't know how many coaches are going to make the trip. You know, I want to get confirmation that Maurice Cheeks is going to be there. I want to get confirmation of, you know, what, you know, I think they're bringing one social media person, one PR person. I don't know else past that. You know, the Thunder likes to try to find advantages in places that other teams don't. So I just wonder, like, how are they treating this 35-person travel party, and who's going to be making the trip? But hopefully we'll have some news on that later today.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, because I think Billy Donovan said it at one point, guys, correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, he said that there would probably be some jobs that don't normally fall to staff members that are going to have to, you know, I mean, it's not crazy stuff, but like, you know, who videotapes practice, and you know, who does some of the things that maybe some of those, I don't know what their roles are, but the guys that are, you know, sort of the individual, Joe, you probably know the titles, but guys that are helping with individual skill development, but are also doing some of the what might be considered grunt work, that, you know, they aren't going to be there necessarily.
Yeah, you've got your first row assistants and the second row assistants, and I'm not sure who on that second row will make the trip.
Yeah. Yeah, and you got to think there's going to be a lot of, you know, scouting and breaking down of film that can be done remotely. So you're going to have guys, you know, they'll stream it. Here comes, you know, practice footage from, you know, Zoom or however, whatever mechanism they have. And then you got guys that are back in Oklahoma City, people, you know, that are handling that sort of thing here that aren't making the trip, but, you know, adding to the amount of hands on deck that can do work over the time that they're in Orlando.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I was reading a story ESPN had yesterday that was really interesting, is what we were talking about earlier. How long is it going to take guys to ramp up and be in game shape? How hard do you push them during these scrimmages, during these seeding games, to have them at their maximum by the time the playoffs start? And basically, like, experts on this topic did not know. They were like, there's no formula for how hard should we push a guy without, you know, someone pulling a hamstring or something like that. And I think each team, you know, maybe the NBA is going to have medical people there, but I think each team is in charge of bringing their own trainers and medical staff. So we might see that 35-person travel party be more heavy on medical staff and trainers than maybe would go to, you know, Minnesota on a Tuesday night.
Good point.
Yeah, the whole list fascinates me. How you decide, and this idea, I think, I can't remember if it's Billy or somebody else brought it up, you know, the idea that assistant coaches are going to have to do things they haven't done before, maybe even setting up, running video, that kind of thing. To me, that's one of the more fascinating things about this whole thing. But the idea that it's a limited number of people. It's a small number of people compared to people who usually work together to produce a team's effort in a basketball game. And the fact that the Thunder gave one of those spots to Andre Robertson is fascinating to me. So I think that speaks well for Andre, because an assistant coach might not be there, a video guy might not be there, or one of the trainers might not be there. So I'm really looking forward to seeing that list.
Yeah,
I'm curious too, from the standpoint of not just the list that the Thunder has, but how does it compare to other teams? You know, what are other teams? How many medical? How many assistants? How many whatever?
Yeah, equipment people and.
Yeah, I mean, I think those of us that have watched the team for any amount of time, we have a pretty good sense of the guys that you can't go without. I mean, Mark St. Ives is one that I think a lot of us, you know, Joe, you had the story earlier this summer. He was the focus of a documentary that came out. I mean, he's been with the Thunder since the beginning. He's, you know, a guy that is, you know, he does a lot of the day-to-day and, you know, the small details of getting these guys ready to play. I got to think he's there, but you know, who are those can't be without guys or personnel of other teams? You know, is there anybody that's going to go, that's going to be attuned to, you know, mental health issues? That's been something that has been talked about to some degree, is, you know, how do these guys handle being away from family, being in situations that are, you know, not normal. Can you do that via Zoom? Can you have those connections without a person being there? You know, I think it's all interesting, and it'll be fascinating to see not only who is on that Thunder list, but then how does that compare to other teams and what they have decided their must-haves are in Orlando.
Yeah, and there's also been some reporting done that, you know, these travel party, I guess travel party wouldn't be the right word, but the amount of staff and personnel that teams can have could expand by the playoffs. They could potentially fly more people into the bubble, get them quarantined in between the seeding games and the playoffs. And also, like, I mean, I know for like media access, there's like tier one in the bubble. There's tier two. They can sit several rows back in the stands. Like, are team owners going to fly in for certain games and like be able to watch their team from the stands? That's also something interesting because they're certainly not going to be in the bubble. So we'll see how that develops. Last topic I wanted to touch on, not a huge newsy item, but I'm going to turn it into a bigger discussion. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander signed with Converse yesterday, and fairly interesting news because Converse only has two other NBA players, Kelly Oubre Jr. and Draymond Green. And I'm asking just because we haven't talked about Shai that much during this time off. He was one of the players we were able to Zoom with, so we did have that story. But in a way, like, Chris Paul's still the face of this team. Shai is certainly the future face. I was on a radio station in Salt Lake City the other day. They asked me what I think Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's ceiling is. And I hadn't really thought about that. So Barry, I'll start with you. Like, in the context of the Converse thing, obviously they see him as someone that can carry their brand, be the face of their brand. I mean, you could argue that he's going to be a bigger deal than Draymond Green pretty soon. What do you think his ceiling is, or his brand as an NBA player?
Well, there's two different things. His ceiling is virtually limitless. You know, the other day, ESPN did a poll or a survey of its notable writers, and they debated who – they basically ranked the NBA sophomores, I think, is the way they termed it. And, of course, Luka Doncic, runaway number one. But SGA basically was the number two choice over Trae Young.
Yeah.
In terms of – basketball future and superstar level. When it comes to branding, though, SGA is not in Trae Young's league. I mean, Trae Young's he is a marketing superstar. He's been voted. He's already played an All-Star game. He's, you know, just a guy that commercialism is eat up with, and that's not Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Some of that is Oklahoma City. Some of it's his personality. Some of it is his relative gradual ascension. You know, he doesn't do anything spectacularly. Trae Young, you know, is a phenomenal passer and shoots 32-footers. That's not, say, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. So I think his branding is not going to be as meteoric as some of these other guys. But his playing is different. His playing, you know, if you're the second best guy in a draft class, you got a pretty good future ahead of you. So I'm quite confident. He's already a borderline star. The borderline is going to be gone very quickly. And, you know, he turns 22 when?
Sunday.
That's right. So he's 21 as we speak. So, you know, his basketball future is very bright. But it was probably a pretty good move to go with Converse because he probably had a whole bunch of people ahead of him in that Nike division.
You know, what's interesting is Barry was talking, I was sitting here thinking about, like, who is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander built in the likeness of? Like, who currently is sort of in that superstar, all-star realm that Shai could most be like? And I mean, it's not perfect by any means, but I sort of think, like, body type and just physical gifts. He's kind of in the Westbrook mold. I mean, mentally, Westbrook's he's his own cat, and then nobody's probably anywhere close to it. But I mean, I think Shea's abilities are pretty diverse. I mean, he's better defensively than James Harden. He's not, as Barry said, he's not the scorer that, say, you know, a Harden or a Trey or probably even Luka Doncic is. But it's just interesting to think about, like, what he's going to evolve into. But you could see him becoming, you know, a guy that is a little bit of a few of those guys, really. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I don't necessarily know if Oklahoma City, like, small market – in terms of the branding part of it, like, I don't think that's not a holdback. I mean, everybody saw, obviously, Durant, Westbrook, you know, they became international, you know, superstars, names. And so that's not the thing that it would be a holdback on the brand. I just don't know that he just hasn't captured people yet, but he's not where he's going to be ultimately as a player either. So I think it'll be fascinating to see as he continues to evolve. Like, does he start to have some of those, you know, get bigger as a brand as he gets a lot better as a player?
As you were talking, Jacko, or you asked a question, St. Joe, and as you were talking, Jacko, I came up with a guy who I'm not saying their games are similar, but sort of their ascensions are similar and potential ascensions are similar. And that's somebody near and dear to our heart. That's Paul George. Oh, George was a fairly high draft pick. I think he was, what, was he ninth or eighth or 11th, something like that, out of Fresno State with Jay the Pacers.
Was 11.
Yeah. So that's in the neighborhood of SGA. Had a solid rookie year. People thought, he's pretty good, not a bad player. And then by the second year, he was really good, and they thought, this guy could be a star. And to me, that's similar to where now we think of Paul George as a superstar, and we've been around him. We've seen him play up close for 2 years. We know he's a phenomenal player. So thanks for that inspiration. I'm going to put that on my, column list as soon as the pod's over.
Well, I look forward to you writing that column because I think it's very difficult to find a player comp for him. Like put out like good examples. Like, you can certainly Westbrook, you can see the fashion. Like, Shea definitely wants that to be part of his brand. He's like made that very known that he wants to be that guy. And he saw the perfect example come just before him in Russell Westbrook. And like Paul George, maybe a similar trajectory, but his like on court style of play, I think it's very, very difficult to find a comparison for him. I can see like a little Harden in the way that, like, it looks like he's always moving fairly slow and he's really crafty around the rim. Like, James obviously gets those foul calls and Shea's not near to that point yet, but just the way that they just look slippery. Like, you don't know what they're going to do. Shea is obviously not at that level as a shooter either, but he just does a lot of things really good. He's still, you know, still probably hasn't grown into what his NBA body is going to look like when he's 27 years old. But, you know, after seeing him up close for 1 year and talking to him, he's a very likable guy. He's certainly not outspoken on anything, and he might also grow into that. But he's going to be a fun guy to follow. I'm looking forward to see what he does. And maybe this play in Orlando does something to sort of boost him on a national level. The Thunder played, what, 3 national TV games? There's a lot of people who don't know much about Shea Gilgeous-Alexander at this point.
Yeah, and for local people, this is a total aside, but in talking about Shea, I can't help but remember when we saw him, a week or so ago when local media got a chance to Zoom with him, he has changed his hairstyle, Thunder fans, so prepare yourselves. There are a few guys that look like they had not seen a barber for a while that we've seen. Now, that may change by the time they hit the court in Orlando, because we hear there are manicurists and stylists and barbers and stuff that will be made available to these guys. So what we saw may change, but just get ready. Some of these guys may look slightly different than you remember last seeing them.
It's a good preview. The suspense is building. Everyone's going to have to wait and see. We'll try to do this a little more regularly, get together. I thought this was really, really fun to talk basketball again for the first time. And if, you know, we've podcasted since then, but actual on-court basketball in a few months. So thank you all so much for listening to the latest episode of the Thunder Buddies podcast, and we'll talk to you next time.